Hey everybody, this is Becky Davidson, and I want to welcome you to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. And I am so excited about today's episode because I am going to get to introduce you to two people who I just admire so much, Wally and Lisa Bryan. I have been friends with Wally and Lisa over the past several years as they have attended different Rising Above events, from SOAR to the different events that we've done for moms like By the Brook and Brookside. And just over the years, I have gotten to know them and spent time with them, and their story is just amazing. And in this conversation, they're going to tell you what their life has been like as special needs parents as they have raised their two children, Kelly, and their son, Matthew, who has Fragile X. They are just an amazing family who share their heart through the struggles, through the trials, and through the triumphs. And I think you're just going to love hearing what they have to say. And you know, today happens to be Giving Tuesday, and it's a day where people set aside some time to look at different ways that they can give back to the community, to other nonprofits. And if you have been blessed by Rising Above in any way, and if you feel led, we would love nothing more than for you to be a part of Giving Tuesday by helping us to be able to continue doing what we do here at Rising Above, as we bring hope and encouragement to special needs families through things like this podcast. So if you feel led, we would love nothing more than for you to join us and contribute to helping us be able to continue to bring hope and encouragement and continue to lift up the special needs community. And you can find more information in the show notes about how you can be a part of partnering with us here at Rising Above. But you are going to just so enjoy this conversation with Wally and Lisa Bryan, and I can't wait for you to get to know more about them. So join me here as I welcome Wally and Lisa Bryan. Hey, Wally and Lisa, thank you guys so much for joining me today for the Rising Above podcast.
Well, hey, Becky.
Hello.
Good to be here. I'm glad to be a guest on your show.
On the show. Well, I am so glad that you guys are taking time out of your busy life as special needs parents to have this conversation with me. And, you know, I was thinking about when we first met. I was trying to remember when we first got connected, and if I'm remembering correctly, Lisa, help me out here. Was it at a By the Brook?
I believe
years
so.
Ago?
Well, let's
it
see.
It was in Atlanta.
It was in Atlanta?
It was when you went to one of the, when y'all were doing
yes.
one of the day things in Atlanta somewhere.
It was By the Brook for the day, the Saturday, By the Brook on the day.
One of the day things. It was like Northside Church or some
yeah.
one of the churches in Atlanta where y'all did, and that's when Lisa came for the first
okay.
time.
Yes.
Well, but it's probably what was the first By the Brook retreat was 10 years ago, so it's probably been closer to that.
Yeah,
like 7-8 years ago. Yeah,
we used to do several events down there and hope to again soon, but I couldn't remember. I remember meeting you at seeing you at a By the Brook here in Cookeville, but that's great. And then Wally, you have been to several of the dads' retreats. You and Jeff knew each other, and you have been to several of the dads' retreats as well.
Yes, I was three or four, I think. Seems like. I know the last two that were up at the, I forget the name of
the camp. Yeah.
There and then there were a couple Tim's Ford State Park.
Yeah,
there was one. I can't remember where it was. I think it's four of them I've been
That's
to.
Great. That is great. So, well, guys, tell me a little bit about the Bryan family. Tell us a little bit about your story, like how long you guys have been married, and just a little bit about you guys.
Oh, let's see. So, well, we met as students at the University of Georgia. We are big Georgia fans, so we
I know you and Jeff just kind of had a big rivalry there, didn't you?
We like to heckle. So we were students at the University of Georgia. We met in 1988, I would say. We were married in 1991. Started a family, actually, lived, Wally is from coastal Georgia, St. Simon's Island, and I'm from the metro Atlanta area, so we're far apart, but we settled in the Atlanta area in the suburbs. We actually picked a suburb that was on the way to Athens, Georgia, so we could get to University of Georgia football games because that would be important to us. So, especially as young, naive,
no kids, no special needs.
So, so this year is our 28th wedding anniversary year. We live in Lawrenceville, which is about 20 miles northeast of Atlanta. Wally works for the Coca-Cola company. I worked previously at the YMCA, and then when we decided to start having children, I decided to become a stay-at-home mom. Our daughter was born first, Kelly. She was born in 1995. She is our non-special needs child, typical, I guess.
However you want to say it.
However you want to put it. I know. I've always called her typical. I don't know if that's the correct, but she's the non-special needs child. And
arguably.
Then yes. And then our son Matthew was born in 1999. He is our special needs child. So
Kelly,
that's us.
Matthew. Yeah. And so Matthew, he had, tell us about his special needs. Fill us in on him and his unique needs that he has.
So he, the first several years were challenging, to say the least. Matt, you know, this was my second child, so I had a little bit to base on, or we had a little bit based on as far as what was supposed to be kind of normal, as far as, you know, following what Kelly did. So I was always, you know, looking at milestones, kind of like, well, Kelly did this at this time, so Matthew should do this at this time. But he never followed the pattern that Kelly had followed. Every milestone was delayed. He was very difficult to just console, be happy. He was very... like he just didn't feel good, was upset, you know, cried all the time. And like I said, every milestone he was missing, he didn't crawl when he was supposed to. He didn't walk when he was supposed to. He got recurrent ear infections over and over. But every time, you know, we'd check in for our regular checkups, and there was nothing that was like a red flag that was, was wrong, but kind of that mother's intuition, you kind of knew something wasn't right, because this is not how my, you know, my other child
to compare it to.
Right, to compare it to.
The comment that we got a lot, though, from doctors early on was, well, he's a boy.
Yes.
And boys think slower than girls.
Yes.
Gotcha. Which, I mean, it's true, but that was kind of the recurring theme for a while, working through all of that. And part of that being because, like she said, we didn't have anything specific that was wrong, if you will, in the sense that there was nothing you put your finger on or point at. There was not a particular physical ailment or disability. It was just a term was used early on, was general developmental delay type of situation.
Yeah, I think a lot of us got that diagnosis early on. Yeah.
And he couldn't, you know, you couldn't hold him and rock him and console him. He would never be, you know, he didn't want to be held. He didn't want to be rocked. He, you know, we spent a lot of sleepless nights because he didn't sleep at night. A lot of sleepless nights we got in the car and would just ride around because being in the car would kind of calm him down.
And they've done that. Yeah.
So,
drive till he falls asleep and then hope you can take him from the car to the bed without him waking up.
Yes, I totally
know. That was kind of the first really almost 4 years of going back and forth between, something's not quite right, but we don't know what, and, you know, maybe we should see this doctor, and then, well, maybe this would help, or maybe you should see this, and it was kind of a guessing game as to how to, you know, basically make him happy and comfortable. I mean, really, at that point.
But then at four, right at age four, almost his birthday, if you will. It wasn't exact.
The month show.
It was a month. Yep. She remembers things like
March 10th, 2003.
Well, there you go. I would have never known.
I love that, Lisa.
But we finally did receive the official diagnosis of Fragile X syndrome after going to our second developmental pediatrician.
Yeah.
The first one diagnosed him with extreme ADHD and wanted to put him on Ritalin at age 3. And when we left there, I still remember this very vividly, Lisa saying to me, I'm just not comfortable with that. And I was like, well, then that's fine because, you know, yes, she's a doctor and she has all that training, but you're a mom. And that is a big deal too. And so he's gone 3 years without taking Ritalin. If we wait a month, it's not going to hurt anything.
You know, I think though at that time too, I think we've grown up, you know, doctors always, in my mind, doctors knew everything and knew what's best, you know? And it's like, you know, when they say that, I'm thinking, oh, well, they're the expert. I'm not, what do I know? But you know, I just, you know, now looking back, you can see it's things I believe like the Holy Spirit giving you that intuition to know that, you know, this is not what you need to do. Because I remember she followed up, that doctor followed up the comment with, it wasn't really regulated to use that type of drug on somebody that young. So we were going to kind of have to guess at the dosage. And I said, no,
not on my
no,
child. Yeah. So was it almost a relief at that point, you know, when you finally, someone finally puts a name to it?
It was. Like I said, we left that doctor and a few months later went to another developmental pediatrician and she ordered the test that ultimately ended up finding Fragile X syndrome.
Yeah, with Fragile X, just real quick, briefly, a quick, it is a genetic defect that there is a blood test you can run and it's a very quantitative diagnosis. It's not a spectrum disorder type thing. I mean, Fragile X triggers autism. It's a known cause of autism, but it's not like autism where it's a spectrum disorder and it's very subjective. This is, you run a blood test, you count a number of repeaters on some particular gene, and if there's more than a certain number, then you have Fragile X.
Yes.
I mean, so it's a very cut and dried. The doctor said, I know a lot of things it's not by observing him. I'm thinking this one thing that it could be, we could run a test. And then we said, yes, let's do it. And then that's when, you know, then it's when we got the official diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And it was a relief. It was, strangely, it was a relief in a lot of ways to finally have a name of something because of all those years of guessing of, you know, just something just didn't seem right. And to finally have a name, that was the relief part. The other, it was a double-edged sword, Fragile X syndrome being a genetic condition. We then learned that it came from one of us. And it turned out it came from me being, you know, X chromosome is where the defect is. And that's where it's passed through. That was like a kick in the gut, because, you know, I had no idea. And just, you know, being the mother there too, I mean, just, it was, you know, that just really knocked me down because, you know, to think that it had passed on through me to my child.
Yeah.
And then they went on to say that it, you know, would probably be, it could be in Kelly. It could be in other family members. You know, it's like, I remember us talking about, you know, we realized something wasn't quite right with Matthew, but we didn't realize the implication that it might be many other people as well.
Part of it, there have been a lot that we've tried to work with over the years. I think it would have been better emotionally for us as a family if it would have come from me. My personality, I'm an IT guy, so therefore I think I could have compartmentalized that a little better.
Right.
For Lisa, it was very hard and very much dealing with guilt. Guilt she placed on herself, which made it even harder to try to deal with that because it wasn't like I couldn't let up because it was nothing I was placing there or it wasn't what somebody else was placing
there.
Right.
She just had to work through it.
So that double-edged sword is true. It was great to have a diagnosis and know what it was because then you could go research something, learn something, start figuring out what can you do, what choices do you have. It means people came before you have already dealt with this. And I mean, there's a lot of all of that. But then it also led to this other side that was a challenge as well. The other piece that kind of come as a gut punch to that is you can now no longer think that the general developmental delay is going to go away.
Right.
It is a genetic syndrome, short of the hand of God.
Yeah.
He will live and be born and die with that same syndrome.
Right.
Yes, God made him, so God could change his chromosomes anytime he wants to, but
yeah.
Long story there, but we've come to the conclusion now that's not God's will in this case. There's other great things.
Yeah. Well, how did you guys as a couple work through that? Because you're not only dealing with, the grief of, we now have this diagnosis, but Lisa, you're dealing with the grief of going, this is genetic, like a genetic condition that came from my side of the family. So you're dealing with two kinds of grief there all at the same time. And so how did you guys as a couple work through that to get to where you are today of acceptance and going, this is God's plan and path for us?
Right. Well, first of all, it's not like it's a finished product. I don't think
you're done, right?
Yeah. We're not done. We haven't figured out any answers and all that. It's this is a lifelong thing. It was part of it was really hard early on was feeling guilty and then feeling like I've given my husband something less than the typical, father.
I'm sure, Wally, you didn't think that at all.
He's just as much my son as he is her son.
Right.
But I understand her emotion, but no, that's not the way I looked at it in any ways.
A lot of that I kept to myself. I tend to keep a lot to myself anyway and don't share a lot of that stuff and all. So I would keep a lot to it and then just kind of cry a lot and all that. But I remember when we first started, when we finally did just start talking about little things, pieces at a time. And it's like, I think I remember telling him, he could go find somebody else if he wanted to, because that could give him the son, that I thought he deserved, that he didn't need to be, as I said at that point, stuck with me and this forever.
Even you, both of us, but Lisa especially, have come to realize the fallacy of that outlook. Still figuring it out, but
it's 20 years later now.
Yeah, 20 years later, I've moved past that for the most part. But it was very real, and that was just raw emotion.
That's where you were at that point. And how many other people have felt the same way? And so I think it's great for somebody else to hear.
Yeah.
Someone who's further down the path to say that, acknowledge that, but know that you've worked through that too.
Well, and honestly, our faith then was not where it is now.
No.
And what I can say now, our faith wouldn't be where it is now had God not given us Matthew.
Yeah.
That's just it. And I know that lots of people talk about different parts of that, and we can break it, people can break that down any way they want. What I can say is I would be a different person, and I would be chasing different things and different dreams, activities, whatever you want to call it, had we not been given. I mean, God teaches us through Matthew every day and still does.
Yeah.
That was a big part of having to work through some of that is move to the part, and Rising Above was a big part of that. We have in another room part about being fearfully and wonderfully made. That was a slow process to come to that realization. Because that didn't happen overnight, and it still does. I mean, there's still days, but generally speaking, over time and through Rising Above and other things we did and just our own faith walk in church and everything, come to realize that God doesn't make mistakes, we don't have a mistake here either. We're also drawn to the quote in the Bible, who sinned? This blind person or his parents? Neither. He was born blind to bring glory to God. And in my opinion, there is, not that he's the only one, but as far as my circle, nobody brings glory to God any more than Matthew does.
I smile as I'm listening, because I think it's interesting the different ways that we've handled different things, because Wally is the IT logical thinker, you know, kind of cause and effect thing. And I'm the emotional, you know, worry about things, get sad about things, get mad at him if he's not getting too upset about it too.
I'm not emotional enough, so therefore I get in trouble.
And I just chuckle because it was the way, you know, thinking back now, it's the way that we were able to process some of it too. I was at home. He was going to work. I used to get mad at him because he was getting to escape for the day.
Yeah.
And I was at home, and
my favorite story about that was, this was earlier on, and she said, "Well, you get to go to work," and I was like, "Wait a minute, I get to go to work?" And she said, "Well, let me ask you this: when you're at work and you go to the bathroom, do any of your coworkers come in and pull up on your knees?" I said, "No, that's generally frowned upon." She said, "Exactly."
It's just, I think the different processing, that's what I chuckled, is because we're two different. We laugh because of that too. That's our personalities. We were friends for several years before we started dating. So we had a friend relationship before we even got into the love relationship. But it's funny just the different ways that we process. And, some of the matter of fact things that he thinks, and then some of the stuff that I still carry around. And that's another thing too, when we found out the diagnosis and where, you know, all of a sudden then there was already a National Fragile X Foundation that had been started. So there was information out there. And they, you know, they were like hitting it up. So it was an overload of information as to, you know, what we were kind of being fed. And I'll never forget, we picked up the phone one night. The National Fragile X Foundation was in California at the time. And we called the 800 number, and the director, Robbie Miller at the time, answered the phone personally and was like, you know, so he said something to the effect of welcome to our community or something. Yeah. And it just floored us, you know, but it was, I don't know, it really meant something, you know. It'd be like, there are other people, you know, there are others, and all this flood of information, and, you know, it's like brain overload. So,
and you just realize you're not alone, that you're, you know, you've got a community, of people who get Fragile X. You know, I was never really familiar with Fragile X until I got to know you guys. Can you just share a little bit about what Fragile X is, how it manifests, and kind of, I would love for you, as part of that, to share kind of what your day-to-day looks like now that Matthew's out of school. So
I will. If anybody wants, can I give a plug for information? The National Fragile X Foundation is the organization, and if you Google that or you know, that's a wealth of information.
Website is fragilex.org.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's a wealth of information to know. But essentially, the Fragile X syndrome causes a lot of developmental delays, causes a lot of anxiety, overstimulation. A term we learned is hyperarousal, of basically all your senses are being overloaded at the same time, and your brain doesn't process it. Your brain doesn't react and regulate like a brain should. Low muscle tone,
enlarged ears.
Oh yeah, enlarged ears. There are several random things that you don't think that they all look like until the first conference that we went to with the Fragile X Foundation, and we walked in the room and it was kind of eerie because it's like, oh my gosh, everybody does look like
it was,
each other.
It was a room full of little Matthews.
But now, you know, everybody's different. So it can be, it's usually more severe in boys because boys only have one X chromosome. So if your X chromosome is affected, that's going to cause more issues. A girl has two X chromosomes. So if one is bad and one is good, the good one can compensate for the bad one. So girls typically have learning disabilities, cognitive problems like that. Math is real hard. Sciences are real hard.
I would imagine a lot of girls that don't have a brother go undiagnosed just because it's like something's just off.
Yeah.
And then, but, you know, and it's okay because getting the diagnosis, there's not like a pill for it.
Right. Like you were talking about developmental play.
But if you're not really getting a lot of symptoms, then you just, it's all symptom-based treatment anyway.
And I believe the latest numbers are around a third of the people with Fragile X syndrome are also on the autism spectrum, which that's where Matthew's, I've kind of tagged along with autism. A lot of times I'll even just say autism because more people are familiar with autism because of the way that autism has, well, people have just learned more about it and heard more about it. But it's the Fragile X is the leading known cause of autism.
But only 2% of people that have autism have Fragile X.
So, which
speaks to the whole vastness of autism and what we don't know.
Yeah.
But for this small base, we do know why. Like in our case, instead of having a general autism diagnosis, we know why he has autism, essentially. Which I think overall is, well, I think it's better for us, at least it is for me, being the analytical person anyway, because I don't have to even ask the why question,
right?
Which is a big part of, that's my job, that's what I do, it's what guys do, because we solve problems.
And right.
There's just, you don't even have to go down that path, because now you know why.
And I guess you said
your day-to-day look like? I know Matthew used to be in school, and so now he's you're in the same boat that we are in that we're aged out of the school system or aged out going to school. So what does your day-to-day look like with Matthew?
Well, it's drastically different now than it has been. Like you said, we have Matthew was in school. We're in a small private special needs school with only about 50 students from kindergarten through 12th grade, and it was the perfect place for him. We live in a large county school system district, and with all the sensory issues that he has and overstimulation and all that, it just wasn't the right environment that he would succeed in. So this private school ended up being just the perfect place for him, and he grew a lot and learned a lot, and was able to thrive really and do things that we never even thought he would do. Was able to speech therapy and occupational therapy and all the letters of the alphabet therapy and all that I laugh at is like all that, and he's just been able to thrive. But anxiety has always been the biggest problem, and still is. Early on, his speech wasn't as good, and so it was hard to communicate what may be causing some of his anxiety. And also, we just didn't know, a lot of stuff we've learned over the years, but he didn't know. And he would respond as it's kind of that fight or flight mechanism that they say everybody's got in them. His response was to flee whatever was causing the anxiety. Sometimes that would mean to just run from whatever.
Wow.
Or sometimes that would mean to hit or bite. He would do that. And typically those that were closest to him were the ones that would get bitten or hit or the worst behavior. Yeah. And, at first it's like, why is that happening? But, hindsight is always easier to see. But, you learn that those that were closer, that was security for him, where those were he was safe.
Right.
So it was really a compliment in a kind of different kind of way that was the case. Not fun, but But as he grew, the worst years probably were the puberty years, when the testosterone was kicking in like typical boys.
Right.
Aggression got more, and as he grew, it got harder to handle with some of that. So, that's been real challenging to work through. School became challenging, just with lots of issues related to that mainly. And then when he became 18, it became obvious to us that it was time to transition into something different.
Right.
So he's now 20. In the past 2 years, we've been trying to find the new different.
Yeah, new normal. Your new normal.
Find the new normal. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
he has also, as he's grown, he's matured though a lot, and he can communicate with us better as to what he needs or what's upsetting,
what's bothering him.
And we understand, we're able to anticipate and be aware of more things that, you know, might set him. So we're kind of able to work together, you know, with that. And as he's grown and matured, he's learned through a lot of the therapies, he's learned ways to cope himself and regulate himself. You know, so it's definitely a lot better now, you know, than some year early on. But a typical day, really, I stay home with him still. I'm the caregiver. He has gotten involved with a organization called Extra Special People here in Watkinsville, Georgia. And it's a they partner with the University of Georgia and have students volunteer as buddies, they call them. And so it's been a win-win really for us. They offer after school activities and outings. I know this past Friday night they had a fish fry with other, they call them no kids allowed. It's NKA. It's for adults over age 18, you know, and so like they go and then a buddy goes with them and it's a UGA student, which is the same age, you know, so it's kind of like a peer hanging out with a friend kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's a one-on-one. They have summer camps in the summer and then just different things like that. And that has been a wonderful thing. I drive 45 minutes 3 days a week. I take him over there. It takes 45 minutes to get there. It takes 45 minutes to get home.
For a 2 hour.
It's worth every bit of it, isn't it?
You know what? He loves it. He's happy. He is. I'm seeing so many in just the 2 years that he's been involved over there. At first, he's grown so much in 2 years that even, you know, it's amazing to see the growth and how comfortable and how he enjoys, you know, because there's very few things that he really enjoys doing. And so when you find those things, it's just, you know, it warms my heart as well. And so I'll drive 45 minutes to go and do that and know, you know, that. So we've done that on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then, he's volunteering at a local cooperative ministry here in the Grayson area, which is another suburb of Atlanta. And he likes to stock shelves and make sure that cans are turned the right ways. He's always, whenever we go in the grocery store, he's turning the cans the right way and making sure everything's, you know, right. And he likes order. So we're trying to find ways to do that. And we know the director of the Southeast Gwinnett Co-op, and we've worked with her on Mondays and Fridays, and now he's gotten to where he and she, they get donations of food from local churches, and he's gotten to where now he gets them and he separates them, you know, puts them in categories, fruits, vegetables, that kind of thing, and then puts them on the shelf. And he's started now filling these weekend bags that they give out to clients that come in, and you know, so we're slowly expanding his responsibilities there and hoping, you know, that'll grow into even more through the years too. So that's pretty much our week.
Yeah. An interesting note to that, talking about being a blessing, him being a blessing. The director, Laura is her name, the director of that ministry, for a long time, they have, you know, like all, I'm sure Rising Above does too, but has a volunteer log so you can keep up with volunteer hours.
And right.
And so when they would show up each week, they would sign in and each would sign in and you put down how many hours. Well, for the longest time, it was 15 minutes. So it was 0.25 hours.
There you go.
He went in, he did, they put a little bit aside. She has been great because she's helping create a role for him.
Yes.
But then for the longest time, she referred to her, and that was on back then they were doing it on Thursday afternoons, and she called Thursday afternoon her Matthew 0.25 ministry.
Love it.
And she said it was the highlight of her week when he would come in. And that's where they are blessings, because I think, I mean, just in different ways that people, his genuine care and love and whatever is just pure at heart. Mm-hmm. And I think when people, our world so much wants to see that people can, once they get over being, I mean, and with Laura, it's not the case, but with general people, once they can get over the being freaked out by the special needs,
right,
then they can then see the purity. And I think it warms people's heart, because I think people crave it, because we generally don't have it so much of the time.
Yeah, it's funny with when your special needs are basically limited to your mental, I guess is the right way to say it, mental special needs. You know, he doesn't, when people see him coming, they're not really sure how to handle him. You know, it's, they kind of, well, I say they part the Red Sea, kind of, they go, you know, it's almost like I'm going to catch it, or I'm going to do something, or I don't know what's going on with him and all. I said, you know, a lot of times I've gotten envious before of somebody in a wheelchair, at least when they're coming, you know that there's something going on when you see them.
Yeah.
You don't know that right away, but he doesn't look quite right. So, you know, so that kind of, some people react differently to that.
Well, and I've said all along, you know, when we go somewhere, it's very obvious that John Alex has special needs. He's in a wheelchair, and we always, I feel like, get more grace
right
from the community than families who have kids who have may have more hidden disabilities that are not quite so seen. And so to come across the Lauras of the world.
Yes.
Who love our kiddos. Goodness, you know, what a gift.
True blessing. And it's, I mean, you know, it's funny because if you were to ask Laura that, you know, she would say, you know, he's the blessing to her, you know, but it's the, yeah.
And that's where God's math is so often. Awesome. God can make math work where it's great for both people. It's not an either or.
God's
economy.
So I want you to tell us about your amazing daughter, Kelly, as I have watched your story since I've known you guys, followed you, you know, on Facebook and seen your story, and I've met Kelly, and, you know, John Alex is my only child, so I do not have the sibling experience, but Kelly has been amazing, just for me to see her and see her with her brother. So just tell us about your daughter, Kelly, and their relationship, her relationship with Matthew.
Well, yeah, she is. She was fully in love with her brother from the moment he was born, you know. it's funny, she's 3 years older than him and, you know, was so excited to be having a younger sibling. And then, but, you know, when he was born, it's like, well, she wanted him to play right away. It's like, forget the, well, what do you mean he's just a baby, you know, on him to play? But she was, you know, we one of the pictures that we have hanging up is the day he was born, and me still in the hospital bed, and she's sitting there on the edge of the bed, and she was holding him, and he actually has that picture hanging on his wall on a bulletin board, and talks about that too, you know, Kelly holding him when he's a baby and all. But she fully, you know, fell in love with him from the get-go before we knew anything. And, you know, just was all in. And then when we did, you know, I don't know that she ever, you know, I'm sure she knew, well, I mean, probably before school age, she didn't really know that he was that different really. Cause you know, he was so younger and all, but when she started school and could, you know, as she grew, she would know that there were different things and all. Life was difficult, because as a family, the four of us couldn't really go to places like most families do. If it was a loud place, you know, we'd be trying to, one of us would be trying to deal with Matthew and she'd be sitting there tagging along. And so that had to be frustrating, you know, early on.
There was one time she said to us early on, she wished she had Fragile X.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, wow. I don't think you really, I mean,
yeah.
No, you don't, but I understand what you're saying.
Right. To get the attention to
yes.
you, know.
Because she just saw how much hands-on it took for Matthew, and she was jealous of that, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Understand, though, I might add, but not that we, any of us had any choice, but that was some of the impacts. Now, thankfully, in her case, you know, it I guess it could go really good or really bad from there. It went really good.
Yeah, I've kind of seen, and just in my limited knowledge of people that I've seen, it's like, it seems like siblings either fully embrace or fully oppose. Doesn't seem to be much middle ground for that. I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's not like we had all the answers and knew what to do.
We had no magic answers for anybody else either.
We recognized, I guess, even maybe not even realizing we were recognizing, but at an early age, you know, I didn't want her to be any more affected than she had to be, I guess. Now, you know, that obviously could, that she was going to be affected. That was, you know, that was something I couldn't take away, whatever. But we started early on trying to have her do things, and, you know, we would basically split up. It became, I would take her to go see a movie because Matthew doesn't like dark theaters, you know. Wally would stay home with Matthew, or vice versa. They'd, you know, they would go do something and we'd stay home. So we would have to split up. But we did make sure and keep her involved. You know, she played youth soccer and you know, go to birthday parties and all the stuff, you know, that you do. We had a lot of kids on our street that became friends, you know, as neighborhood kids do. And so everybody could kind of be out and, you know, playing and that kind of stuff. You know, try to make her childhood as normal as possible. Mm-hmm. Our church had a very good children's ministry program that she was very involved with and loved going. And that was crucial to her too, to all that.
Things as a typical teenager that wanted to, she wanted to be a part of. They got to do that.
Yeah, because she was children's ministry, and then into when she became old enough to be in the youth group and everything at church. And yeah, that was crucial. That gave her an outlet, and it gave her people that she could talk to that weren't mom and dad.
Right.
The director of the school that Matthew went to actually at the time had a program for siblings where she would take them out once a month to dinner or bowling or something without your special needs sibling and without mom and dad, to just talk about, you know, life as a sibling, and if it needed to be a gripe session for 2 hours, she'd let them gripe, you know. Right. And so Kelly had people other than us that she could talk to. I think that was crucial to have them.
And early on, one of the first Fragile X conferences we went to, we went to a session. They had breakout sessions like a lot of conferences, and they did two back-to-back breakout sessions on the topic of siblings. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the ones we went to, and they had a sibling mm-hmm. lead the session. So they had a sibling and a psychologist up there together, which was really awesome. And it was a great job they had done. And the first session of the two back-to-back sessions, the first one was all of the bad stuff about being a special needs sibling, and go ahead and recognize it, getting out on the table. Then the second session, the second half, if you will, was all the good stuff, which is smart to finish on the
good note, exactly.
But from that we learned and then we tried to, some of the things we learned from that we tried to put into practice. But the key being is there are both. And you can't eliminate the bad and only have the good.
Right.
There are impacts to her that were outside of all of our control that were negative impacts, that, like when she said, I wish I had Fragile. Mm-hmm. But then there were also these positive impacts that other people, and most of the time it's just us that see the negative.
Right.
But like what you see and other people have seen that lead to a deeper person, a more mature person for their age, you know, all of these positive traits that come from having a sibling with special needs, because they know real life and they know what real struggles are. And it tends to level set a lot of that, you know, middle school, high school age drama and stuff like that. It just, so that was, you know, that was interesting from us, from a, you know, the lessons they talked about, and then we saw them and tried to work to make those things happen, not ignore the negative, not pretend it didn't exist, but try to make sure, you know, the positive things were able to happen too. And one of the things that came out of that, she became a defender of all special needs kids at school.
Yes.
If somebody started picking on one of these special ed kids, she'd bow up and tell them, and all of a sudden, I mean, she had big boys in her school going, yes, ma'am. Because she had to know about her that you can't explain.
Yeah.
She could say things to people And instead of people reacting negatively, they felt challenged by her in a good way.
Right.
How she does it, how she did God's gift. I mean, it is the only way I can explain it. But she would go to people, why are you saying that? Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that. You don't need, they're just different. They're just, and people, but, oh, okay.
I mean, she
actually had a way about her that made it for everyone's benefit rather than like she was tearing someone down.
Right.
Yeah.
Educating in a kind way, you know.
But very stern.
But very stern. Yes. Yes. But that's amazing. And it's just been so neat to follow, watching her over the years, because I've known you guys for several years now, and just seeing, but now she's married.
Yep.
And lives in a different town, different state. And I know that has brought a whole new set, you know, because she was such a big help to you.
Yes, that's a whole new set of challenges. Yeah. That we're still working through.
I know.
It's a new normal. Everything's
Another new normal.
You know, I think with everything is like, once you, and this was probably true with any parenting, but once you get used to one stage and you get it figured out, then something new comes
up. Something new comes up. I know. It just keeps us on our toes all the time.
Yeah. So, but yeah, she always, has aspired to be a teacher. I just think it's a calling on her life. I think God's put that calling on her life. From an early age, she's just, you know, called to be a teacher. She taught Sunday school at church when she was in middle school. They were letting her help adults, you know, do that. And by the time she was in high school, she was teaching her own, you know, like, elementary school, age Sunday school classes and all. She was concerned going to college. She didn't want to go to, she wanted to make sure and go to a college that Matthew would be able to come visit her, because she knew that the sensory overload would be an issue. And I was thinking, what 18-year-old is worried about?
That's amazing. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, this is amazing.
Wally kind of alluded to it, the maturity level in her, you know, she, in some ways, she grew up faster than other kids her age, which makes me sad and happy at the same time. She had to be more mature because, you know, we asked her to help us with different things earlier than other kids probably were. And so some of that maturity level, you know, that affected different kind of friendships and stuff too, because she didn't really have time, you know, she didn't see the, she thought a lot of the teenage nonsense was just nonsense as well. So that was challenging for her. But choosing a college, she wanted some place that he would come visit. And she ended up at a really small, much smaller than we thought she would have gone to, but it ended up being the perfect place for her and what she needed, and the perfect place for him as well. Reinhart University, that is where they went. It's a small school that's affiliated with United Methodist Church. And I believe they had about 1,500 students when she was there. You know, but it became a place where it was about an hour and a half away from us, and we could, you know, ride over and have dinner and all, or go eat in the dining hall with her. And they had a football team, which was real important to us. Being sports fans, we wanted to have that to do. And it ended up being where we could go over there and go to football games with her. Well, Matthew'd never gone to football games at all, because he won't go to the University of Georgia games where there's, you know, 90,000 people. That's just way too overwhelming. But he would go there, first because Kelly's there, and second because, you know, of it being small, it's just much more conducive. Well, it turned out to be where she was embraced and loved and supported for who she was as being a student, but then the school embraced and loved and supported our family. And so it kind of, I mean, it's, you know, I said, God led us there, I have no doubt, and was able to, you know, embrace or just welcome all of us and kind of, you know, give us like a family kind of atmosphere. But she was able to get her degree in early childhood education, and she graduated this past December. Met her now husband there, and they got married and have moved to North Carolina. And she is teaching elementary school, fifth grade, regular education, but she does have some special education students in her class. And she's already, you know, champion for all of the kids that she has. She just has a love for these kids that's just amazing.
And I'm sure that
she's amazing. That's been neat to see. And yes, I miss her.
Of course you do.
And sometimes she doesn't even be quite as wonderful as others.
Yeah.
Well, she was a big help to me. And it was very, you know, it's been difficult to not have, you know, I always had her there to help me and do this, you know, or if I just to run to the store and grab something, you know. And so that's been challenging to find, you know, there it is, that new normal to find. And change is not something that I do well either. So, you know.
So we close every one of our podcasts by asking the one thing. So I'm going to ask you guys, what is the one thing that you want people to know about Matthew? What's the one thing you want people to know about your amazing son? And I'll let each one of you answer that.
The one thing, you know, I guess God, this is more than one thing, but the pureness in heart and the, you know, he's funny. He's lovable. He's loyal. I mean, that's more than one thing, but so many people don't get to see the real him because the anxiety is such a wall and it blocks so much where he cannot, this world is hard for him to function in. I said, you know, God's world, he can function in. Man's world is hard. It's overstimulating.
Right.
But he's just the purity, the genuine love that he is.
And people don't understand, for example, people don't understand that he doesn't care who wins or loses the football game. He doesn't love Georgia and therefore hate Tennessee or anything like
right.
that. To him, it's all the same, really.
Yeah.
I mean, not totally, but I mean, he knows we went to Georgia and that we're Georgia fans, but he doesn't care. No. I mean, for years we had to say yay Florida when Florida was beating us
oh,
up.
Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry.
It was very painful.
That was hurtful for you, I know.
But we wanted to work hard not to spoil that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because that is a beautiful thing
right.
in him. And so that's kind of what I would agree with, kind of the one thing. And just to piggyback on that, if for any people, we watch America's Got Talent, and if anybody saw Cody Lee on America's Got Talent, Matthew does not sing like Cody Lee. Bible says make a joyful noise, and Matthew makes a joyful noise.
Love it.
But it is not pretty. But like Cody Lee showed to a lot of people on TV that these kids have a voice and they have so much more going on inside them than we tend to think. That's really the thing I would say. Don't sell Matthew short or any of the others either. Yeah. There is a lot more going on inside their world. Mm-hmm. And if we could open ourselves up to their world, we would all be better off for it. They would obviously be better off, but I think even more so, we would be better off.
I think the scripture of Jesus' teaching on the Beatitudes of blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Yeah.
That strikes me.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Well, guys, I'm just so grateful for you taking this time to have this conversation with me. I cannot wait for people to hear your story. You are some of my most favorite people in the world. And I just am so grateful for you. And just, I love watching your family and seeing you all through all that you've been through, thriving. It may not feel like it sometimes. And I know that, you know, we only see the Facebook world. I get that, you know, but truly to see you guys join together as a couple and doing this together, raising your son, and just, it's a beautiful picture. And so I'm so thankful that you guys would give up your time to share your story and let other people hear about your journey. So thank you guys so much.
Thank you. And you and Jeff and Rising Above staff have been very instrumental in our life as well. So
it's been a big part.
Yes, it's been a big part.
We appreciate it. Thank you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We would like to thank Jimmy Thorpe and Patrick Mayberry for providing the music for our podcast today. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.